Well, for some of us.
For some of us, it's more morning than others. Unlike Seth, I did have a few hours sleep, but not a lot, so I'm very curious what I'm going to be saying. I'm Wayne Price. I've been an anarcho-pacifist. I've been a Trotskyist, various varieties of Trotskyist. I've been a revolutionary anarchist. I'm now a member of the Northeastern Federation of Anarcho-Communists. And I'm sort of in the general area of sit with Seth. I don't know if I'd call myself a Euglenicist. I certainly think that a dialogue, if not a full synthesis, is very valuable. Given the amount of time we have to explain the nature of Marxism, the nature of anarchism, and the relationship between them in 10 minutes or so, I'm going to just present some theses without really a lot of argumentation. Then we could, maybe discuss it some more or think about it later. My main thesis is that there's, as Hal Draper once said, there are two souls of socialism. There are two main tendencies in socialism and socialist movements. There's one that draws on the past, on the tradition, which is to look for some kind of leader, some kind of authority from above to solve our problems for us. And down through the ages, people have looked to kings to save them from the barons, and the barons to save them from the kings, and the bourgeoisie to save them from the aristocracy, and aristocracy to help them against the bourgeoisie. Some good representative of the leadership of these existing society to help them, and if not, some fine leader from their own ranks to be risen up to replace the existing authorities, who might use the people as a mass movement, as a battering ram, to get themselves into power. And he called that socialism from above. And there's a minority tendency in socialism, as is in all struggles over the generations, is the tendency from socialism from below, democracy from below, the struggle of ordinary people, ordinary working people, to have a better life, to rely upon themselves, to rely upon their own declaration and pressure of being independent, and pressing on the system from outside to win even the reforms, even the reformist gains through independence and revolutionary threat. Now, that distinction, I think, is not simply a distinction. It's easy to say, well, obviously, it's the anarchists who are on the libertarian, democratic, socialism from below side, and the Marxists from the authoritarian side. On the end, then Draper put it the other way around. He thought it was the anarchists who are the authoritarians, and Marxists who are, or Marx anyway, who was more democratic side. But I think this distinction runs inside both tendencies. That is, there is both an authoritarian side to Marxism and a libertarian, democratic, humanistic side. And there's an authoritarian, elitist side to anarchism, historically, and a libertarian, democratic side to anarchism. On balance, I believe, if one has to choose between them, that anarchism is the more libertarian and democratic tradition overall, on balance. But that's not so interesting to me. The more interesting part is to look at the democratic and libertarian sides to both of them and to the authoritarian elitist sides that are to be opposed and to be winkled out. It's important because overall both Marxism and anarchism have historically been failures, historical failures. Marxism has been a utter disaster historically. The first effort at establishing a Marxist movement developed into the social democratic parties of Europe and the world, which, as we know, ended up supporting their, became pro-imperialist, pro-statist, pro-reformist, supporting their authoritarian, their states in World War I. And to cut a long story short, today have completely abandoned any pretense of being for a new and better kind of society, the various social democratic parties. The second attempt to build a Marxist movement, to revive a Marxism, going back to the original ideals of Marxism, was that of Lenin and Trotsky and the other Bolsheviks and revolutionaries, and as we know, that ended up in Stalinism with rivers of blood and mountains of skulls and the murder and killing of tens of millions of workers and peasants and revolutionaries throughout the world. And which now has just collapsed back from state capitalism into ordinary, traditional, pluralistic capitalism. So it's really, you can't say you want to revive or work out Marxism. It's not honest without saying, I have to understand what it is in Marxism that led to this, that led to these disastrous results. We cannot rely upon the good anti-authoritarian side of Marxism without, you know, facing up to these, I believe. I think that's responsibility of Marxists. On the other hand, anarchism has, well, it's just come out of 80 years of being utterly marginalized for various reasons. And that's the thing that anarchists have to discuss. And with the last great hurrah of anarchism, at least in the West, was in Spain in the 36, in which, given the chance to lead a major workers' revolution in Europe, the last chance for populist struggle against fascism, they utterly betrayed their program, joined the bourgeois state, and completely failed to make a revolution, and resulted in the mass murders of tens of thousands of workers by the fascists due to their failure. So anarchism has also been a failure. So we have to look at these things and say, here are these traditions that have stood for the opposition, that have raised the concept, the sense of values of a different way of human beings living together, that have raised the ideal of a society without a state, without bosses, without hierarchy, without alienated labor and alienated life, and the values that are utterly in opposition to the existing society, which has seemed in the past to be so triumphant, but which in fact has its major crises even now. And yet, these movements have failed badly in the past. And the purpose of, I think, a theoretical exploration is precisely to say, well, we've got to do it right this time. We've got to do it right this time. It's not simply that anarchism or a libertarian socialist society would be good, although it's true, it would be good. It's also that if we don't, they're destroying the world environment and the ecology. What was the article I just read? The ice caps in the Antarctic are melting. The nuclear weapons are more widespread than they ever were at the height of the Cold War, raising the risk of eventually nuclear war, which nuclear winter that could wipe out the human race and most of the species that are unlucky enough to share the Earth with us. So we've got to do it right, and that's why we explore this topic. All right, let me just say some things briefly then about that. What was marvelous about Marx was that he had this analysis of how he saw societies functioning, this economic analysis and otherwise analysis, which is really more, we say economics, really more than that, it was a critique of economics, really a class analysis of how society exists and how he saw society existing in a certain fashion, capitalist system, that it would produce those who had the possibility of changing that society, of overthrowing it. You read the people he writes about in Capital, he's not talking about the people he's talking about, you read it in the most wretched section of the working class. He talks about the, especially chapter 10, volume 1 of Capital. He talks about the people, the women pushing the coal carts in the mines, the people in the with their families, with their children in the dusty looms, the people who are the most oppressed and the most exploited. That these people, he's saying, are the ones who have the capacity to change the world. And he believed that. And that's exciting. And he shows how this class develops And today we have a situation where we have the working class is more international, more developed, larger portion of the population, the world population, than ever before. And that's exciting about Marx and worth studying. Not that he said that this was the only form of oppression or the only area that was worth organizing around and so forth. I don't think he ever said that. And certainly I wouldn't say that. And it's important, I think, those, and I identify with those sections of the anarchist tradition which say that the working class, the industrial proletariat, is at least one of the central forces in society that are capable of transforming society, if not necessarily the only force. Unfortunately, he saw this as a sort of an automatic process. It can be interpreted as, and has often been interpreted as, a fairly automatic process, that here capitalism created industry, and industry created more capitalism, and industrial capitalism produced the working class, and the existence of the working class and industrial capitalism produced a certain type of consciousness which ultimately in a socialist revolution. Now it can be interpreted in a more flexible and more humane fashion in terms of the importance of subjectivity and consciousness. And I'm not arguing who's right or not, but it's since that's no longer my main concern, what's orthodox, but it certainly has been interpreted in this fashion, which results in a very dangerous kind of thing. Because if you think that it's a fairly automatic process, then you don't really have to talk about choice and subjectivity and morality. And if you think that it's a science that understands this, and you know the science, you see, you know how history is going to develop, then you can justify all kinds of things. You can justify a reformist program because in supporting capitalism and imperialist states, because after all, it's going to come out all right in the end. This is going to automatically, as history rolls on, become a free socialist society. You can justify totalitarian Stalinism because after all, since you know the truth, you know what's good for people, it's all right to step on people and stamp on them and kill them and murder them in mass because it's going to come out all right in the end because this is the way historical process will go and you know the truth of the process. It can result in all kinds of terrible things, which we could expand on, which doesn't mean at all that I disagree with, as Seth points out, Marx's critique of Proudhon or whatnot. And tied in with this is Marx's centralism, that he believed that the society, the economics was best organized through the top down in a centralized fashion. One great central plan. This is, again, it contradicts the whole notion of the end of the state and so forth. He thought there would be no more state, but there would still be a centralized planning. And he identified with this, partly because he came out of the struggle in Germany against a lot of the local feudal lords and so on, and wanted a unified German bourgeois state. It was part of the whole democratic tradition to have a Jacobin kind of centralization. I think we're sort of running out of time here. So I've said some things about the weaknesses and the strengths of Marxism, of anarchism. Weaknesses, well, we know there's the very under, somebody referred to as under-theorizing, a lack of theory in anarchism. So that it can be said that there's this, you know, infinite variety of, you know, what do you mean when you call yourself an anarchist? You have no idea what that means when somebody calls himself an anarchist. Of course, I think that, in fact, the range of variety of views that call themselves Marxist is about as infinite and multivaried, but that they have at least a pretense that there's all, you know, there's these texts, right, the holy text, the sacred, the main things that you can orient back towards. When I talk to an anarchist, I have no idea what they necessarily mean by it until I ask, you know, five other questions. And that the worst of that comes out to an anti-intellectualism. You know, it doesn't matter. What you don't need theory because it'll come out of our experience. We'll sort of reinvent the wheel. We can start all over again. And the other main weakness I would mention, well, two of the major weaknesses is lack of taking power seriously and ambiguity about the concept of democracy, about whether you really think that people ought to democratically take over and run society. Anarchism is very ambivalent about that. There's a tradition that says we don't believe in democracy. We believe in society run by contract or something, or no one's got the right to tell me what to do, even if it's the majority. The problem with that is if some things people, no one has the right to tell me what to do. There are all sorts of things that are sort of outside of collective decision making, like sexual orientation or religion or all sorts of other things. On the other hand, there are other things. Give the example, if a community decides it wants to build a road, then a decision has got to be made one way or another. If a minority can veto it, then the minority's got power. There's got to be some kind of collective decision-making, and that's what we call democracy. I'm sort of running out of time here. So I've just thrown out some ideas. I've discussed this further in an article I wrote on libertarian Marxism in the latest issue of Utopian, which we're selling here and on the table in the back. Also, there's an article on Marxism and historical materialism by Ron Tabor. And to conclude, that I'm generally in agreement with Seth that there needs to be a dialogue moving towards some kind of ultimate synthesis of a revolutionary strategy that's committed to the values that Marxism and anarchism have in common, but has a more developed strategy for how we can reach it. Thank you.